Welcome to Blueprint to Boom, your plan for taking a small idea and building something big. Hello and welcome to Blueprint to Boom, the podcast for small businesses and SMEs in the UK. That's our mission, to try and give useful hints and tips and tricks for those of you who are running or thinking of running a business like that. And it's not just for the smallest micro businesses. An SME is defined as a business with up to 250 employees. So we hope that we produce useful stuff for everyone. Every week, we're going to be introducing a guest who is either helping or advising small businesses or runs one themselves. This week, my guest is Elaine Davis, my guest and my friend, Elaine Davis. Elaine has over 30 years of experience in design engineering, working with new technologies and innovative companies within the mechanical engineering industry. She's got extensive knowledge and ground experience of mechanical manufacturing, including sectors from plastic form injection molding, aviation, automotive and marine industries, and many other electromechanical areas. And the automotive and the aviation bit is probably why you're rebuilding your own 1971 series Land Rover 3 and restoring a 1950s light aircraft, because you've got plenty of spare time, haven't you?
Yes, lots of spare time, David.
Okay, so as always,
yes,
we're going to start by introducing Elaine. Okay, so every week we like to try and introduce our guest in a fun way. Elaine, what I want you to do is imagine that you're in a job interview.
Oh, crikey. Okay. My worst nightmare.
Imagine that you're in a job interview, and then I'm going to ask you some questions that you really shouldn't ask in a job interview.
Okay.
All right. So let's start, though. Tell us a little bit about who you are and what you do.
Okay. My background is mechanical engineering. I'm originally from the Northeast. I moved south with my father. My father had a job transfer, so we had to move down. That's how I ended up in the wonderful Essex countryside. So I started in administration, went through administration, met a wonderful man who taught me everything about engineering, and that got me the bug. And then I worked into the mechanical industry environment and area, which I did for over 20 years. 2010, I left that industry, design and radiation protection, and I set up my own consultancy, sort of doing advisory bits and bobs for QA, and fell into the R&D world, which I adore.
And that's what we're going to talk about today. Excellent. Okay, first of all,
yes.
Right, round one.
Oh.
The we don't understand engineering questions. So if we hired you,
yes,
how quickly could you fix all the engineering mistakes we've already made?
I would do an audit trail of the process control that you'd already done to date, reverse engineered it, as any wonderful engineer should do, and then start from roots up to the top and see where we can improve.
Okay. Are you the kind of engineer that follows the drawings, or the kind who makes it up as they go along?
Oh, a hybrid.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. One has to follow a drawing. I mean, back in my day when I was doing technical drawings, it was a drawing board. And then obviously over the years, one has had to evolve into CAD, SolidWorks, that sort of thing. So it's all wonderful and digital. But no, it depends on the drawing and depends on the designer.
Okay. Now, our last engineer left because they were too detail focused. Is that going to be a problem for you?
The correct answer should be, I am detailed focused, but the really correct answer should be, you need someone that's going to get the job done.
Yes, absolutely right.
So a hybrid.
Yes, we like balance.
I like a hybrid.
Okay, round two, the misunderstanding R&D questions.
Oh, good. Oh, crikey. Okay.
Right. So if a client insists that their idea is groundbreaking, but clearly isn't, How would you tell them politely or enthusiastically lie?
Oh, it happens a lot, and you have to guide them. And what you, the stock phrase that we use, or I've used over the last 15 years, is that you are doing R&D, and perhaps you might think it was deducible by the competent professional that you had advanced science and technology. However, the strict HMRC guidelines deduce that maybe you think it's R&D, but it won't pass the bar for HMRC.
Okay. On a typical R&D report, what percentage would you say is actual science and what percentage is creative writing?
Well, I'm a bit squeaky clean. I do everything by the book, and I will be honest with my client base. I've done over 600 successful R&D claims. None have gone to inquiry. So I make sure it ticks the box. So without upsetting the chief technical directors or whatever, I will say to them, there's no point in me putting your project in if it's not qualifying R&D activity. And I will fight to make sure it doesn't go in the report. So I sort of, my persuasive techniques, I'm guessing, not dissing their projects, but basically saying it doesn't meet the bar. So I wouldn't put it in.
I like that.
No, well, because the thing is, people think that the problem is with the perception of R&D these days, people think that you can only claim for R&D if you've got a laboratory or if you're in pharmaceuticals. But actually, ground roots engineering, manufacturing, polymers, all sorts of metal benders are all doing groundbreaking R&D, and they don't realise it. So they probably don't think about doing an R&D claim, but you've got other companies where they take it to the extreme and they really think they're doing R&D, but it's not, it won't pass the bar if you put it in an R&D claim for the revenue. And there's no point because they'll just throw it back out. So HMRC have a very high bar. They're set with their legislation, and I just persuade the client that it's my interpretation of the legislation and it wouldn't pass.
Yeah,
it's tricky because you don't want to diss their project because they're passionate about their baby and their innovation. So,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay, round
three. I
don't
think I answered that question correctly.
No, you did. You did. You're the expert.
Thank you.
The small business reality check. So,
yes.
Okay, how would you cope in an environment where we have no formal documentation but insist we do?
Oh, my word. Yes, no. I'd have very itchy feet and ears. And yes, I'd be eating a lot of chocolate biscuits to get myself over the hives. No. Process control, and I know I'm a geek and I love QA. Process control is such a good idea in an SME. It's a validation. It's ensuring your quality at all times. So document control procedures may seem boring and mundane, but they're mandatory really for good streamlining and also for increasing efficiencies. Whether you're in production, manufacturing, or whether you're in a software engineering company, you need good in-house control procedures. So therefore, that goes hand in hand with document control.
Sometimes we only realise that something is urgent when it's already too late. How good are you at panic working?
I don't like panic working because I never experience it because I'm proactive and reactive. Okay. Not reactive. Proactive.
Yes.
Not reactive.
Proactive.
Yes.
We like proactive.
Okay.
Yes. You restore classic Land Rovers.
Oh, God.
Do you prefer working on projects that are beautifully engineered or catastrophically unreliable?
Ooh. Uglier the better, I think. I think I like something where there's an unknown. So a bit like the R&D world, when you're doing a project, is it innovation? Was it deducible at the outset by the competent professional if you could get the result? The same with your rebuilding something or redeveloping something. You know, if we're reworking something in the workshop or whatever. And because my husband, bless him, is very chaotic, we yin and yang off each other. So I bring the process control, he brings the chaos. messy workshop.
That explains something.
Yes,
okay.
It does.
If this job required occasional travel, would you insist on piloting the plane yourself?
No, but I know a man who would. And he's a better pilot than me.
There we go. Okay, so finally, if we offered you the job today, how long would it be before you started improving everything, even without being asked?
Probably within 24 hours.
I'd give you 12.
Oh, okay. You know me so well.
There we go. Thank you very much, Elaine, for taking part in the shock interview.
Thank you so much. I'm very shocked.
Okay, so now it's time for our usual three pieces of news that's affecting SMEs in the UK at the moment. So first of all, economic news this week is that according to the Office for National Statistics and other sources, the UK economy grew by just 0.1% in the third quarter of 2025, and unemployment has risen to 5%, the highest in 4 years. Weak growth means demand is soft, making it harder for smaller businesses to grow and secure profitable contracts. Rising unemployment and weak wage growth dampens consumer spending, which many SMEs depend on. From your perspective, Elaine, with growth so marginal at the moment, how would you advise an SME owner who's looking to invest in growth? What do you think they can do to turn this around?
Well, I think with growth in the UK, there are incentives that are available to a lot of SMEs, and there are
like the R&D, absolutely.
But moreover, there are grants available to SMEs. So obviously the R&D side of it, that grant you would get if you've already started with your innovation project, because you can claim as you're working on the project. But even prior to that, I do get to work with SMEs where innovation's in the conceptual stage and they're not making any money at all. So they're going to probably run at a loss for a couple of years before they're profit making, before they can actually get things to final production. And I do think that SMEs need to have a look at that innovation gap between SME and larger companies, where they can research and see what grants are available. And there's all sorts of grants available in the marketplace, whether it's for new innovation or to assist on startups. And that's what we like to look after. I like to look after SME startups where they're trying to do something new, quirky, that's never been done before. Advancing in science and technology.
So if people are starting a new business, yeah, where can they look for some of these grants?
Well, you can look, I know it sounds really, and it is going back to where we used to start, going back to 20 years ago, but it is still available. Get in touch with your local Chamber of Commerce. They will have, they've got a branch routing system. They can sort of put you in the right direction. They can give you advice as to what the local government grants are in your area, because local councils, local governments will be able to, local councils, not governments, will be able to give you a grant. But then by contacting those two medias, that can open up a massive, massive chain stream for you to see what other grant funding is available. But I think it's so important for especially newborn SMEs to have a look at that, because I think they think a lot of funding isn't available for them because they're new. That's the misconception.
I found the other end of the problem, because I started the business and it developed in a sort of strange way.
Yeah.
By the time I became aware of grants, the business was too old.
Yeah.
Because they're often for businesses that are up to five yeah, years old or something. Yeah. Like. So it really is important
to jump on it.
To jump on it.
Absolutely. Yeah, and that's
have
the
a
thing.
Look for these things.
The other thing with any SME, and this is, I say this to any SME, if I'm working in conjunction with them, helping them grow or whatever, credit control. Credit control is key. And people don't look at that in the early stages. They think everyone's going to pay them, but they don't. Cash flow is key when you're running an SME and you're getting it off the ground.
And this is absolutely wonderful. And this is one of the things that I was hoping would happen with Blueprint to Boom, is that we're hearing that from multiple people.
Oh, good, good.
Yeah.
Good, good.
So Margaret Anthony from Hardcastle Burton, the accountants,
yes,
she mentioned that. Yeah. And Annie Quigley,
yeah,
from Bibliophile Books, she mentioned the same
exactly
thing.
Exactly.
And I mean, I'm like, as I said, I'm like Scrooge McDuck sitting there counting my pennies at the end of the month. So it comes naturally to me. But I know a lot of people don't have that,
yeah,
financial discipline. And it is really important.
It is key, especially when you're growing an SME. It's that cash flow, because that cash flow is key.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, the second bit of news that I found was that female founders are getting a boost from Starling Bank and the Small Business Britain Partnership. The challenger bank Starling and the SME champion Small Business Britain have launched a year-long programme aimed at supporting female entrepreneurs across the UK. The Female Founder Fundamentals Initiative will offer free online training, peer learning and masterclasses, for example on finance, aimed at women who have recently started their own business. Women currently lead only about 14% of SMEs in the UK. About 30% of sole traders are women. So there's a huge opportunity to scale up. Have you encountered problems as a woman in the SME industry in your career?
Yes and no. I think there's been a shift, I will say, in the last 10 to 15 years, I think there's been a major shift. And I think that if you're a competent professional in your field, then it doesn't matter what gender you are. If you know your stuff, then that's wonderful. However, because the industry I've worked in has been quite male orientated and male dominated, sometimes if I'm in a room with a lot of male directors, don't know if a woman would know that much about engineering. But then once I get chatting to them and they know that I know my craft, because having to know a little bit about engineering over many, many different sectors is key. And I'm lucky that I'm very involved in the polymer industry and the mechanical engineering industry. But if I equally go into another industry, then I've got to make sure I know my craft. I know what I'm talking about. So that's why I always make sure I do my research, especially if I know I'm going to be in a room of maybe six tech directors or six technical operators or whatever. I need to make sure I know my craft. So I don't, I've come across a couple of people where it's a bit like, well, what do you know about the polymer industry? What do you, but then it's
they very quickly realise that you do.
Yeah.
But do you feel...
Getting them on your
side.
Do
you feel that you've had to work harder?
Yes.
Because you're a woman?
I have. Yeah. Especially...
And that's the problem to a certain
extent. In the early days, I did. I had to sort of prove my knowledge and try and dissipate the imposter syndrome a bit, really. Mm. And I think that's what it was. And I think, thankfully now, any gender's recognised, as long as you know your craft. Don't waffle. If you don't know the answer, say, I'm really sorry, I'm going to have to get back to you. That's a new thing for me. I'll research it.
Yeah.
But I think because I'm always ultra, ultra prepared, then, you know, be proactive, not reactive. But I think nowadays we have seen a shift for the better. I was actually asked at a wedding a couple of years ago, do you think there should be more female board members? Mm. And I said, no, there should be board members that are competent professionals in their field.
Yes.
You can't just be a board member because of your gender. You need to be a board member because you've worked yourself up. So no, there should not be more female board members. There should be more board members on big companies that actually have done the ground roots, worked the way up. They know what they're doing and they know the business. So
okay.
I think it has shifted.
Okay, final piece of news for this week. So by the time this episode goes live, the budget will have dropped.
Yes.
So, but a new survey of UK SMEs shows mounting concern about rising costs, tax burdens, and limited confidence in government support ahead of the forthcoming autumn budget. 42% of SME leaders say the government should prioritise employee tax and costs in the budget. Major cost pressures, rising operational costs, employment costs, access to finance, and the budget's impact is expected to be material. Mm. Now, I don't want this podcast to be political particularly, but have you noticed a shift in feelings since last year?
Yeah. And I think not just in my R&D world and my IP and patented world, but I think there has been a dramatic shift. And I think I've always been passionate about small SMEs. And I think what we've got to be mindful of is that we can't jump on the SME and take all their financial routing, far as a better term for it, away from them. We need to be investing in SMEs. The whole idea of the R&D scheme, going back to that, was to promote British innovation, to promote British development. And I just think that's just the sight of that has been lost slightly. The rate was cut for how much SMEs could claim on an R&D claim. And there's, as far as my peers are telling me and as far as the research I've done, it doesn't look like they're going to increase that rate for the SMEs. The large company scheme, yes, they're trying to increase that rate, but shouldn't we be looking after the little guy in Britain?
Well, yes, but the point of this podcast is that 99.5% of businesses in the UK are SMEs.
I know.
So someone in Westminster is missing the point.
I know. And I'm hopeful, she says. I don't know. And I am on jitters waiting to see what the budget's going to come with, because I'm hoping it's not going to hit the SMEs in the pocket again, because that would be completely and wholly unfair.
It had actually occurred to me, we didn't plan it in time, but next year I'm going to do a budget special.
Oh, you should do.
Which will be, that'll be quite interesting.
Yes,
we'll record it immediately after.
Yes, that would be good. That would be a really good idea. Yeah.
Okay, so that's it for this week's news roundup. Okay, so now let's get down to business. Right, we have talked already a lot about R&D tax credits. No, that's absolutely fine. That's your area of expertise and you're passionate about it, which is lovely to hear. But let's go right back to the beginning.
Ooh.
What is an R&D tax credit? Who can apply? How do you get it? What's it worth? And that's the next hour.
I shall be very, very brief. It's a government incentive that was set up. It was conceived in 2000. And basically, if you're a company that is advancing science and technology and overcoming technological uncertainty and scientific uncertainty, then there might be an R&D claim there. And what that means is that you can get a reduction from your corporation tax, which you can then use to reinvest into your company. And that was the whole idea when the scheme was set up for SMEs in 2000. So it's been going for 25 years.
So can you give us an example of, or maybe even one or two examples, completely different things, that the sort of things that are qualifying for these tax credits?
Okay. Again, protecting my client's IP, which is important,
Right.
Some of these things are in the public domain, so I'm all right to talk about them. I've got an example of a metal bender, a lovely company in East Anglia that were having to redevelop methods. They do CNC machining. So again, not just in a lab, not just pharmaceuticals, metal benders, manufacturers, any sort of that type of process can claim R&D if it is qualifying. He had to come up with some new method to CNC an item out of a very restricted material. He had to rewrite software on his CNC machines outside the scope of their original design. And that's the thing. It's when it's not routine, and this was not routine development. Lots of other Harry Potter wizardry happened. And the item he eventually produced ended up on the camera in the International Space Station. And that's just one little example of a small company, an SME with 15 people doing innovation. And that's the sort of people we want to encourage.
Yeah, 100%.
I know. That's why I love this. You can see why I love this job.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
So what sort of businesses don't realise that they can qualify for these tax credits?
Well, again, a lot of companies, food production, if they're coming up with new process control procedures. They don't realise that they're actually advancing science and technology through redevelopments within their in-house systems. A lot of manufacturing companies don't realise that they're doing R&D. Lots of aviation, automotive, marine. I've got quite a lot of marine clients. And some of the stuff they're doing is absolutely groundbreaking and absolutely advanced in science 110%. And say therefore qualify an R&D activity.
So it really is quite broad.
Yeah.
And so anybody that is doing anything that might be considered research and development, how would they go about finding out whether they qualify for this?
Right. Well, a lot of people speak to their accountant in the first instance, which is fine. And a lot of accountants are very good at doing R&D tax credit claims, no doubt about it. However, when you have to do an R&D tax credit claim, you have to do a technical report and a financial report. The accountant generally, not all accountants, because I've got lots of friends who are accountants, the technical report writing is done best if it's done by a specialist consultant that knows what the revenue want to see.
Yes.
So yeah, that's that why. Sense, yeah. So that would be their first port of call. And again, if you've got an SME, going back to what we were saying earlier, who are starting up and looking for grant funding, they will come across consultants that are doing R&D credits, maybe while they're doing their little search to get some grant funding. So that's another way they can fall on top of people. But what is really important is to make sure that they get a reputable consultant, someone that's not going to jeopardise their claim. And do, I mean, I don't know if you've seen, there's been an awful lot in the press the last sort of 18 months, 2 years about little jumped up companies that have started to do R&D claims.
No, and, I haven't.
Well, thankfully, Treasury clamped down on them and some of them have actually been taken to court, which is good.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And this is the whole thing. And again, going back to accountants accredited, they've got ACCA after their name.
Yes.
You go to see your financial advisor. He has an accreditation.
Yes.
Because he's qualified in his field. What we're doing in the R&D world is where there's an R&D council and we're lobbying Parliament to try and get R&D consultant companies legislated. So it gets rid of the bad eggs. It gets rid of those companies that are doing the unscrupulous claims and the fraudulent claims that HMRC don't want to see.
That's something I can relate to, actually, because the IT industry is a little bit the same. Yes. It's unregulated.
Yes.
There are a lot of cowboys out there that are not meeting best practice
when
it comes to security.
Exactly.
And there is actually an act going through Parliament at the moment about cybersecurity, but it's not bringing enough managed service providers into scope.
Yeah.
And I think as the world evolves and gets more complicated, you do need to know that you're doing business with people that do care about their clients and do bend over backwards to do the right thing.
And for the security aspect, which is vital with an SME.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a theme of what we talk about, is that security, data security, IT security, it doesn't just apply to the big organisations. Everybody has to be aware of it now.
Definitely. And I think, and also because obviously everything's evolved and we've got all this, and I'm sure you're going to come onto it with AI technologies that can be used in my role by my clients.
Well, as you mention it,
yes.
How are you finding AI is affecting your role or your clients?
Look, I mean, AI is a valuable tool in my eyes, but you still need a human touch. You can use AI to validate whether a project is deducible, but that source data then has to be uploaded to whatever AI tool you're using to deduce whether or not that would meet the bar for the revenue.
Yeah.
But you do need that human touch. And I think, I think that the adoption of digital technologies within SMEs is vital. It really, really is. And I think we need to see that shift more. But they also just need to be a little bit careful of how they use their how they're using their AI.
Yes.
If they want to protect their intellectual property, if they're thinking of patenting something,
don't
stick it in chat.
Do not stick it in ChatGPT.
Yeah, you know, and I mean, my whole thing about, you know, if I'm writing a technical report for a client,
you can't.
Don't use that.
You absolutely.
Because
can't.
I am protecting my client's IP. And also the human factor. You need someone to walk the floors.
Yeah.
And I think AI is a fantastic tool. Use it wisely. And it will help you with your client, your company. But AI will help you with efficiencies and stuff like that in-house.
Yes.
But
that's what I'm starting to use it a lot more.
Yeah.
I'm using it on a daily basis now. And there's certain things, because of the way my brain works, it has actually revolutionized my life, because there's stuff that's in my head and AI just helps me to get it out.
Great. Yeah.
But it is just a tool.
It's a tool. And this is my thing. It can't do your job for you.
Yeah.
Don't use it if you're writing a health and safety procedure for your company. You need to be the competent professional in health and safety. Write it yourself.
Yeah.
That is that is your role. So I think it's great, but the human factor is also an excellent. I think it's the priority, really.
At the moment, AI is just software. It's not sentient yet.
No,
thank goodness.
Yes.
But I mean, I've seen people who think that just by buying a piece of software, which is a tool, it's going to solve all their problems.
No.
But if you go to the DIY shop and you buy a drill, you've got to use it.
Yeah.
You've still got to use it.
Yeah.
And it's like with any piece of software, you've got to train people on it. You've got to set it up correctly.
Yeah.
That's a constant process. It's not just a one-off
thing.
Yeah,
it's all that background work you need to do to be able to get it to operate effectively the way you want it to. And it's the same with using AI.
Yeah.
But I think it will help improve efficiencies within companies for sure. SMEs, definitely, yeah.
So within the R&D claims world,
yes,
what are the biggest mistakes that small businesses make?
Not utilising an expert in their field. Don't go and find someone just because they're cheap and cheerful and they're giving you a flat fee to do your R&D claim, because they won't drill down. They won't dig for the coal. You need a consultant who will drill, find where the R&D claim is. Because you get a lot of people, you'll go and have a technical meeting with the technical team and they'll go, oh no, we've not done much R&D this year. But what I do now is, because I've learned over the years, I'll go and walk the floors. I'll go and have a look and I'll trip over a test rig and I'll go, well, what was that for? And they'll go, oh, yeah, that was something we were doing. And, oh, I forgot about that.
Yeah.
And then it's just get an R&D consultant or use a company that are passionate about being regulated. So get one that are thinking about, you know, they're the ones that are lobbying the government to try and get this regulation and get us accredited. So therefore, you know, everything they do will be done by the book and there won't be any recourse backwards. Your claim won't go to inquiry. You won't be wasting time. So I would say get good expert advice.
I think that is really good advice. And you know, one of the reasons that I'm doing this podcast is because I've been running a business for however long it is. And I've made a lot of mistakes.
Yeah.
And I remember you've made me think many years ago, I did actually purchase another business. And I went for a cheaper legal route.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't get a good lawyer to help me with the purchase process. And as a result, it cost me a lot of money.
Yeah.
So one of my big things is the difference between price and value.
Yeah.
Yeah, it might be the cheapest thing,
yeah,
but frankly, when I see the cheapest quote, that's the first one that goes in the bin.
Yeah, and it's quality.
Because there's a huge difference between price and value. And as a small business, I would say, please don't buy on price.
No.
Look to the value of the proposition.
Do your research of the services that you're purchasing, and don't be afraid to ask for references.
Yes.
Even if, and I'm not just, you know, we talk about that in the home, get a reference for whatever, but even if you're buying into a new accountancy, even if you're buying into a new software company, ask for references. A good SME, they won't think any worse of you if you say, right, can we talk to a couple of your clients that you've built this database for? Can we find out what they think of you? And get your references and do your research.
Absolutely right.
Yeah.
I'm very happy when someone asks to talk to my clients because I know what the answer
exactly.
they're going to get.
Exactly. Yeah, ditto. Same with me.
We've mentioned a couple of times about protecting ideas, protecting the intellectual property.
Yeah.
So, and not putting things into ChatGPT that are
commercially sensitive. Please don't put things into ChatGPT. No. Please don't do that.
So what steps should people take to protect their ideas and protect their intellectual property?
Well, there's a combination of legal mechanisms that companies can do, which are things from NDAs, trade secrets, trademarks, copyrights, design rights, patents. But again, the thing is with a patent, it is, and I've got friends who are patent attorneys, so I will be kind, but it is a bit of a reason to print money. and also, if you want to patent your product, then that can take up to 2 years.
Okay.
It's a long process.
Yeah,
it's a long drawn out process. So I would say keep your ideas and your cards close to your chest. I've been having this sort of discussion with HMRC because we don't talk about NDAs with HMRC. We talk about confidentiality. So I have certain R&D clients who, just one recently actually, where I've put a project in their R&D claim that they're really wanting to patent. So I've been very minimal with what I've released to HMRC. And HMRC have an agreement, that's fine. As long as we say, look, I'm really holding back on the details of this project, but I can confirm these are the basics of the development project. Yeah. But because I want to protect their IP, I'm only releasing a tiny bit at this stage.
So even to the government, you protect?
Yeah, because even though there is this, because for years there's been this no man's land, and other consultants might disagree with me, but I do release it to HMRC and I will give them enough so they can see there's R&D being done so they will pay the claim out. But I'm not going to release all of it. And I do have a stock paragraph that I put in that denotes the reasons being because of confidentiality, not because of an NDA, but HMRC have this. They agree there is a confidentiality clause that we can have between an R&D claim and them. You know, I don't want someone who's reviewing a claim, then going to a dinner party, having a chat, going, oh, guess what?
Yeah, you don't know who's talking to who, do you?
And even though they work for HMRC and Woe Betide, they broke the confidentiality agreement.
Absolutely not.
Exactly. But I'm just quite mindful of I don't want to take that risk. But patents, yeah, go for a patent. If you've got something that you think is patentable and you want to protect your IP, then in the future, again, there's another government incentive called Patent Box, which means that companies can claim tax relief on the profits of the sales of their patented product. And again, another government incentive that was brought in a while ago to encourage people to protect their IP in Great Britain and, you know, make us the one.
Okay. Before I quickly ask you a little bit about the quality assurance side of what you do, I asked you to give us a competition question because Labyrinth Technology is donating a Samsung Galaxy A9 tablet. Anybody who answers all of the competition questions right from this season of Blueprint to Boom will win. It's going to be drawn from the hat. Competition ends on the 31st of December. Go to the website blueprinttoboom.com to find out more details. But what is your competition question, Elaine?
I'm afraid it's about IP, because again, I love a bit of IP. So my IP question is, it's the Golden Arches Challenge. So the iconic Golden Arches of McDonald's are one of the most recognisable symbols in the world. What type of intellectual property protects logos, names, branding, like this. And I've offered a multiple choice, if that's allowed, David.
Go on, yeah, go on, give the multiple choice.
Okay, multiple choice is it A, copyright, B, patent, C, trademark, or D, trade secret?
Okay, so what protects logos? What were the options again?
So what type of intellectual IP... What type of IP would protect a company's logo, name, or branding? Like the wonderful McDonald's Golden Arches.
What a great question.
Yeah.
Okay. Very quickly, because you do other things other than just R&D tax credits, don't you? You've got experience with quality assurance as well. So tell us a little bit about that.
Well, I like quality assurance. A lot of people call it quality control. I don't like calling it QC. I like calling it QA because I think if you're assuring your quality, you're more likely to keep up that quality rather than controlling it. That's why I like to refer it as quality assurance.
This ties into the ISO standards, doesn't it?
It does. It does.
So give us an example of that.
Okay. If a company, an SME, have got good in-house manufacturing processes in place, it's quite easy to link them to an ISO standard, which means when an SME are going out for tender, whether they're tendering out to a government body, the NHS, or lots of larger OEMs, one of the questions on the tender documents will be, do you have an ISO standard in place?
Yeah.
And it's just because then they know, they've got good house procedure practices. They know about risk analysis. They've got an audit trail, if there's a recall and stuff like that. So I like quality control, quality assurance, because I like the fact that it keeps everything all tidy, and I like a process and I like a procedure.
And it is, as you say, as your business grows and you start looking at larger opportunities, to be able to say I'm ISO 9001 or I'm ISO 27001, they are a couple of the big ones, but which people do look for.
They do, but also for your own in-house process procedures, if you've got a system in place, whether it be ISO or whatever, if you've got a system in place that continually shows that you're keeping an eye on your quality, then that will also streamline into your effectiveness and your efficiencies as a company. So it will streamline into your stock control. It will streamline into your manufacturing processes, how you do from sales order processing through to dispatch, post-market surveillance, getting feedback from your client. It's a massive, lovely big ball of comfy procedures, which is what I quite like, which I'm terribly sad I know.
I say that a massive, big, comfy ball of procedures. And this is why we need process consultants like you, isn't it?
Can't help it. We like order. We like order.
Yes, we do. We do like order.
But again, for an SME, though, it will help with their production efficiencies.
Yeah.
It will really help them with their process control. It will help them streamline things, and it will just, it would, from a client placing an order with you to it going out the door, if you're in a manufacturing world, and then after, post, again, with your post-market surveillance, getting client feedback, making sure the client's happy, to if there was an order, if there was a recall, God forbid, that then there's processes in place for you to be able to, okay, I've sold that to David on the 30th of March, 2024. I know what day it was delivered. It's got a serial number on it. I've got to recall all them serial numbers. I can contact him straight away and go, can you not use that, please? And it's that sort of thing. It's from the very conceptual requirement to initial design control procedures all the way through to production going out the door and thereafter. It's, in my eyes, it's a no-brainer. But then I would say that.
Well, thank you very much for absolutely fascinating roll through R&D and quality assurance, Elaine.
You're very welcome.
Okay, so every episode we're asking our guests to give us three blueprint bullets, the three most important lessons that you'd like to share with small businesses. So, Elaine, this information is going to be on the website.
Oh, gosh.
So it's there for posterity. What are your three blueprint bullets?
Advice. If you're, like we said earlier in the podcast, when you're a new SME, get advice from people, get good advice from people, and get that advice really early. You use your peers.
Don't be afraid to ask questions.
There's
no shame in asking questions.
Please, whether that is at a networking function, get in touch with your local Chamber of Commerce. Find out if there are like-minded companies in your area doing something similar to what you're doing. And then get advice. Go and talk to people. And the great thing is, because compared to 20 years ago, we've got all this wonderful media out there now. You know, items like this. There is so much online that you can get advice from, but get the best advice and get it early.
Okay. Second one.
Oh, gosh. You see, this is me showing that I'm a geek. It's just like good record keeping. Sorry. I'm not sorry, because it will pay dividends. If you can document control, and I've said the control word, but that is important in this type of thing. Document everything. Keep good record keeping, because again, eventually, if you did go down the route of the R&D world, you're going to get someone that comes in like me that wants to talk about what you've been doing for the last 12, 18 months. Document it. Keep a note of what you're doing. If you're doing innovation, make a note of it.
There was something I read once. If it's not written down, it didn't happen.
Exactly. Absolutely. Well, I'm going to have that. Yep. Thank you. I shall borrow that. Okay. Thank you very much.
Third one.
Oh, again, this is me with my R&D hat on, and I'm really sorry to be boring, but I'm so passionate about there's not enough people making R&D tax claims that legitimately can do so, is don't think that people that are doing R&D claims are just pharmaceutical companies or people that have got a lab or something like that. No, grassroots companies that are advancing in science and technology and overcoming technological uncertainty, depending on what you're doing, and that is the depending on what you're doing, there may be qualifying activity there. And again, it's money, and it's money that you can reinvest. The average SME in the UK gets about between £35,000 and £40,000 back. You can reinvest.
No, that's quite significant.
Yeah, but that can be reinvested, and you could maybe employ a CAD designer,
yep,
someone to increase your R&D programme. And, you know, or you can reinvest that money into looking at possible patents if you've got something that you think is unique and you need to spend some money to talk to a patent attorney. And that is the whole idea. It's putting back into the system.
Perfect. Thank you very much indeed for your blueprint bullets. Okay. And finally, Elaine, we're asking every one of our guests to rate the current environment. Don't be political.
Right.
The current environment for SMEs. And so we're going to go through this quite quickly, because I can hear producer Henry huffing
That's
and puffing at
no,
me
no.
already.
Yeah, I've got my notes. Come on.
So first of all, the overall environment for small businesses on a scale of 1 to 5, how supportive do you think the current political and regulatory climate is for small businesses in the UK?
I would say very quickly, 2.5. No, 2. 2.
You
two.
Can't have 0.5.
I can't. How many decimal places can I go to? No. 2.
Right.
2.
Regulation and red tape. How would you rate the level of bureaucracy that small businesses face today?
Oh, gosh. I'd say easily 2, because, yeah, don't get me started on Brexit. Yes.
Okay. How would you rate the tax environment for small businesses right now, taking into account corporation tax, VAT thresholds and incentives like R&D credits?
Oh, you see, I've got to be very careful here. So we're not talking about NI. So I'll park that one for now. Oh, gosh. I'm going to say 2 or 3. Because I'm on the fence, aren't I? I can't really.
Give this one a 3.
I'll give it a 3.
R&D credits.
I'll give it a 3 because the R&D credits.
All right.
Yeah.
How would you rate the availability of funding and credit for small businesses?
Oh, it is there, but the problem is no one's shouting enough about it. So I would say it needs to be shouted about a bit more. So I'd give it a 3.
Okay. Infrastructure, things like digital connectivity, transport, and utilities that small businesses really need.
Okay, if I just talk about my area where I live, East Anglia.
This is about everybody's lived experience,
okay.
as they say.
No. Just on my experience where I live, I will say it's very poor. If you want to pop up an SME, it's going to be 2. It needs improving.
Okay. And finally, stability and predictability in the UK. The UK policy. Well, on the basis that we don't know what's going to happen in 10 days' time.
But yeah.
In the UK in policy environment, stability and predictability, 1 to 5.
Well, I would like to come back and answer that and give you that number post-budget.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, tricky. That's a tricky.
Well, but I mean, in terms of stability, the fact that we're all on tenterhooks and have been for weeks because we don't know what's happening.
Yeah,
I personally think that score's quite lowly, but that's not the point.
No. I was going to score it very low because of the sheer uncertainty of it, because there is so much uncertainty going on. We don't know where we're going to be. I'm going to say 2, and I'll give you my revised score post-budget.
Okay. We'll hold you to that.
Yes.
So that is it for this episode. Thank you very much indeed, Elaine Davis.
Thank you.
For a very fascinating roll through R&D tax credits and Land Rovers.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. I hope that was useful. Please do like and follow us on YouTube, LinkedIn. Have a look at the website, blueprinttoboom.com, and I hope you join us next time. Thank you.